Hello, and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Dowring. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving art scene and the people that make it happen. Every Friday at 12:30, we sit down at a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these folks. Conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today, we are talking to Susan Glasser. Welcome, Susan, to Zero Hour. Thanks for joining us.
Sure.
Not to be confused with the Susan Glasser of Washington Post infamy. Is that right? Is that what she works?
Yeah, she does, but it's okay. It works for me.
It does. So, yeah. How does it work for you?
Yeah. Good reservations in restaurants in Washington, D.C. It's really good.
Yeah, I got to find somebody named Tim Bowring who's successful. I'm tired of being treated like this, you know? Anyway. Well, you lived in Richmond for how many years?
From 78 to 2006, so however long that is,
okay.
Over a quarter of a century.
And at the time it was called the Hand Workshop.
Yep.
And you were the executive director there.
Yep. Before that I was in the education department at the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts for almost 13 years.
Wow.
Then I was a director at the Beth Ahaba Museum and Archive, taught adjunct at VCU, and then got a job up in Maryland, and I'm now down in Raleigh.
Wow. Okay. What are you doing in Raleigh? Because this is the part I think that is most timely. Maybe, actually, in some ways, most interesting because of the support you have down there.
Yeah. It's a good art community. I mean, Richmond is a phenomenal art community, and I hope the people who live here appreciate what a sui generis community this is. There's just nothing else like it. But Raleigh is also really pretty wonderful, and the North Carolina Museum of Art, where I'm the director of education, is in the middle of a big expansion, just as the Virginia Museum is.
Yeah.
The Virginia Museum is a little bit ahead of us in terms of their opening date, projected opening date, but it opens up the possibilities for a lot of experimentation, so it's a fun place to be right now.
See, and that's the thing with you. That's what makes you interesting, is that, you know, not only are you interested in museum work and interested in the arts and interested in reading about them and art history and that kind of thing, but you really have an edge. You have a cutting edge that you're always pushing a new, interesting, exciting agenda. Talk about some of the things that you're doing down there, because when you say you're the director of
education,
it's like, oh, this is going to be really interesting.
you're the one who does the stuff with school kids.
Right. You're the one who wanders around and says, this painting is by Michael Angelo.
That's right.
He was a very famous.
Susan.
Right. So, okay, folks. So get ready for some really mind-blowing stuff, because this is not what we're talking about. Let's talk about some of the things you've done there, some of the things you're going to do or have done or will do down there, because I think they're really fascinating in terms of museum education.
Well, the first thing I did when I got down there was to cut out over 50% of what the education department was doing. It was a lot of very predictable stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just like been there, done that. I also have a lot of background in museum history. And it's kind of shocking to see that art museums are doing today exactly what they were doing in 1890, only with more technology.
Yeah.
And it's like, surely we've learned more since then. And I love art museums. I've been involved with museums since the 80s. We do a really mediocre job of engaging people with art.
Yeah, that's the big challenge, isn't it?
Yes. It's a big challenge only in that it's an unprecedented field. There's room for so much invention because we're so reactionary in the way we deal with things.
Yeah.
But it's also a little scary then, because there are no guides out there for how you go about doing something different. And so at the North Carolina Museum of Art, that's one of the things that we're really looking for, is I want everything that we are doing to be unexpected. So when people walk into the new building, they go, oh my God, I didn't know you could do that in a museum, or I didn't know you could look at art that way and validate the way people experience art.
Right.
I can get really boring with some of this stuff because I'm really passionate.
No, this is
about
really
it.
Interesting, because it's amazing, because this is why I really started this show. Now, it's going in a lot of different directions, but I really started the show because of people walking into museums saying, well, I could have done that.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, we live in a culture of people who walk into museums and go, I could have done that. You know, somebody's got to do something about that. You know, there's got to be some bridge built or something. So I thought, well, I'm going to start talking to artists and let them talk about what they do, and maybe people will get it. because you don't find this in European cultures. You know, I mean, they're just more sophisticated than we are about this.
Well, I think they have a museum going habit.
Yeah.
More than we do. I think kids go to museums and school groups fairly regularly in the United States, but in Europe, it's they go with their families.
So you're trying to get people to walk into a museum. Some of them are very sophisticated, so that's fine. So they're okay. But others,
and that's a really small percentage. That's in the neighborhood of 10% of people.
Others
walk
expect
into a
to walk really,
ten,
really,
what 10%, to do.
Really,
knowing
really.
What to do.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So 90% of the people walking into a museum are walking into it sort of the same way they walk into a zoo.
I mean, yeah. Where do I begin?
Where the average amount of time in front of an exhibit, I think, is less than 3 seconds.
It's
interesting.
In the museum, it's about 20 seconds. People will stand in front of an individual work of art about 20 seconds. They will do an entire exhibition.
So how are you
going to
fix? How are you going to fix this? Or do you need not fix it? How are you going to? You used a good word. You said engage them. How talk about that? Because that's what I think you're about.
Well, it's a huge problem within the museum field and within art history. Art history is the only discipline that calls itself art history. Mm. Everything else is it's film studies, it's literature. Right. It's only in art that it calls itself art history. And we've confused art history with the experience of art.
Yeah.
And so you walk into a museum and you don't know anything about art history, or you know very little about art history. And you go up to a work of art because it resonates with you for some intuitive reason. And all of a sudden there's a label there with 150 words on it, which sends the tacit message of, in order to understand this work of art, you have to understand this label.
Right.
And that's a real 20th century phenomenon. Prior to the 20th century, an art experience was not an art historical experience.
Right.
It was you would go into an exhibition in the 19th century and you would look at a painting the way we watch movies. You go, did they pick the right part, the most pregnant part of the story?
Right.
Is that good casting? Is that really how I thought Apollo looked?
Uh-huh.
Is the lighting right? Is the costumes right? Are the costumes right?
Right.
And you really looked at it in terms of, is this telling a convincing story?
But it was representational work.
It was representational work. But even in the 21st century with representational narrative works, we're still couching it in so much art history that you have to read first the artist's name, which is foreign, that you can't pronounce, and then you read who he studied with, which doesn't mean anything to you, in some obscure city that probably doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
And then you get to, in the second paragraph, what the thing is about. And it talks about a lot of art historical terms that you don't recognize. And then it concludes with, and what do you think?
Okay, so you've just put in a nutshell what that experience is. Now, where are you going? What are you going
to
do?
Where we're trying to go with the North Carolina Museum of Art is to say that art history is not the only way to experience art. There are other ways of experiencing art. And what are those experiences? And we're trying to come at it in really unconventional ways. So, for instance, one of the things that we're working on developing is a new audio tour. And you go, oh, well, Susan, an audio tour is not a big thing. Every museum has an audio tour.
Yeah. I mean, those are those things that look like cell phones that you pick up and somebody speaks into your ear. And they usually have an English accent.
Right.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the museum. And the right there is because of the blue period.
And basically what they are is they're reading that 150-word label.
Uh-huh.
And so what we're trying to do is sound is to recognize that sound is an information conveyor. And sound can give you information that you can't get in reading. So, for instance, in a really simple example, is you might be looking at a 19th century or an 18th century colonial portrait of someone, and you could be reading a letter, a real letter, an excerpt from a letter from that person, and reading it with an English accent, because people don't think that the American colonists were really British.
Mm-hmm.
And so as soon as you hear someone, here you're thinking it's an American patriot,
right.
But you're hearing it with an English accent,
right.
The sound is giving you a piece of information.
Did John Adams have an English accent, or was he here long enough not to?
They-